We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey everyone, this is Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and I've got Rosanna Caverno on the line with us today. She's from two businesses that she runs, Iron Curtain Press and Shorthand, and she's going to tell us about how she got into this business and how she has now opened up a retail shop in Los Angeles. So Rosanna, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So I love starting out this podcast by talking about the history of how you got into the paper business and how your business has grown, because I know that you started with custom work and then you kind of went into wholesale and now you've got this retail shop. So can you kind of take us back through the journey of when you kind of, when things started?
Yeah. I was actually reminded of this a couple of days ago when somebody brought a typewriter to write a haiku in our store. We see all sorts of people. And it reminded me of like 10 years ago, I started making invitations for like friends, bridal showers and baby showers using a typewriter to typewrite each individual invitation.
Oh my God.
And then thought, there's got to be a faster way to do this. and then learned about letterpress printing and was like, this is amazing.
I can do all of this without like one keystroke at a time.
one painstaking hand setting of the type to get the layout and then you can print a whole bunch. Oh, so silly. So silly to remember that. But that's how this all started, was just wanting to make invitations for friends, which I think is the way a lot of printers start.
It is. And that's how I started too with my own wedding. Yeah. You know, as I'm doing these interviews with people, it's been really interesting to see how we all got into this business. You know, yeah. I think there's definitely people that come into it knowing I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to have a business. And then there's other people too that just fall into it because they find something they love doing as more of a hobby that then turns into a business or a combination of the two.
Totally. So in the beginning, it was just custom work for other people. And we did like only handset type, which really limits the kind of customers you can have.
Yeah.
But it was great to like practice like running a business on a really small scale, practice, you know, making mistakes of like, oh, I didn't get a deposit and now this person hasn't paid at all. Right. But the order was only $300. And so it was a huge bummer at the time, but like didn't put me out of business. And now I know, have contracts and get deposits and, you know, don't give people their final pieces until they've paid, like tiny common sense things like that, that you just learn the hard way slowly over time. And then about after printing for about 3 years, I was like, I have some funny ideas for cards. And before I knew it, I had a greeting card line and started researching how to do the show. And that's how I ended up at Trade Show Bootcamp in the like winter of 2013.
Yeah, I know.
Showed at the show a couple months later. And it's been a wild ride, like just continuing to like refine what it is we offer as a business and what our services are. We no longer do any custom design work for the custom printing projects that we do. We accept print ready files and then print from there. And like, I love doing consultations with people, choosing the paper, talking about ink and how to best design for letterpress, since most people aren't doing that in their day-to-day lives.
Right.
But being able to be like a print shop that like has expertise navigating like the print process is really, really fun.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize you were doing just that you weren't doing custom anymore.
Well, not custom design. We do tons of custom printing.
But not the custom design, right?
Yeah. But it was one thing I like finally cut out in like January of 2016, just realizing I don't have enough time.
Right. I remember us talking about this because it's such a time versus money versus like, where do you want your expertise to lie? How do you want to serve your customer base? It's absolutely.
What are my skills and talents? And I feel like I have a strong aesthetic and design voice, but it's for my line. Mm-hmm. And if you want me to make invitations, it's going to look the way, but it's going to look like Iron Curtain Press.
Right.
And do you want that? And it like the headache and heartache to like get it to be what makes both people happy. I was just like, I'm going to leave it to the experts, the really good graphic designers. Cause there are, and I love working with really good graphic designers. There's nothing more fun than seeing like their beautiful work transferred into like the physical world.
Oh yeah. And that's fun that you get to like see it through to the end too. So let's take a step back and talk about Iron Curtain Press. You mentioned that you fell in love with letterpress and then you started, you know, you came to boot camp and you went to the show. Did you launch directly to the wholesale market or did you have retail stuff going on before you did wholesale?
Well, I mean, you know, very tiny, tiny retail. I would, you know, I think I sold like a couple cards on Etsy and, you know, would do like various small craft shows. We were in Seattle at the time. So just small craft shows and what people would, buy things. But I think from the beginning, I thought of it as a wholesale like situation. And so by the time we were at the show, I think I had close to 20 accounts.
Nice.
And most of them were in the Seattle area. And I did all the things you're not supposed to do. I walked into a store with my tiny catalog with my cards well underpriced and said, I make cute cards. And then they were like, you should raise your prices and we'll buy a few. And
right.
it was so nice. Like, I try and think of that when people come into the store or email me and are not using the proper etiquette. It's like, well, I didn't know at one point either. So how can I be kind and steer them towards like proper etiquette, but also like be encouraging?
Of course. Of course.
Of someone who's starting out. Cause I was there.
Totally. I want to talk about how you made the jump to the shop, but first, since we're on the talk of like how you're pitching shops and stuff, since you do see pitches come in and you've been on both sides now, you own a retail shop. And so you see pitches come in all the time, but you're also a wholesale line. You have a wholesale brand and you're reaching out to retailers yourself. So I assume that having your shop has influenced how you reach out on your own behalf.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the other side. And I think on both sides of the coin, you think like, oh, if I just had some products, I'll just like make hand over fist selling it to stores. And all I do is do the fun design part. And then from the, as a retailer, you think that, and then as the wholesaler, you're like, oh my gosh, all I have to do is open a store and like stock it with cute things. And it's easy and money rolls in. And I can say in both ways, if you work hard to make that money.
Either way.
So like as a store owner, like I never realized how much goes into getting a product on the floor of my store from like, I see it somewhere and I'm like, I want to find this and put this in my store. But it's like, okay, then you like spend some time emailing back and forth with the maker, and then you finally get it in the store, and then you like add it to your inventory system, put barcodes on it, get it, merchandise it amongst everything else. And then now you're ready to make some money. But you think about all the manpower and time, which is money, that goes into that. And you're like, oh yeah, it's all fair.
You know, it's funny. I've heard that from a lot of our retailers that come and speak at Bootcamp, Heather Haney, Julie O'Brien, like many of them have talked about how being involved in boot camp has given them a fresh perspective on what it's like being in the manufacturer's shoes because, you know, like you said, we don't realize how much the other person or company or whatever is doing on their side and how much work is involved. So I think it's fun to talk to somebody like you who has now seen both sides of it because you can empathize and relate and offer advice there.
But as far as pitching, it's like, you know, just be like, reach out, explain who your line is. Put images in the email. Don't have a link because I'm not going to have time to click on the link, and then leave it at that. If I respond, or if you want to send me an email like 3 to 6 months later, like, oh, I've got some new cards to check out. That's great. And I know it goes, I'm sure other retailers might chime in, but for me, it makes me feel bad when someone checks in a week later or 2 weeks later, like, just making sure you got that email. And it's like, I would have responded if I liked your stuff and thought it was a good fit for my store. Mm-hmm. And I probably actually really like your stuff, but just don't think it's a good fit for the store. So to take the time to tell you that, do you really want me to like be like no in an email? So it's my delicate way of not crushing your feelings, but at the same time, like if it's something that's a good fit for my store, you'll hear from me.
Right. I think two things to that point. One, we've heard from retailers in the past that, you know, that have, well, let me back up here and say every retailer is different. So
absolutely.
So you're representing your feedback and how you feel about things.
Absolutely.
But we've heard that same kind of concept from a lot of different people of like they won't necessarily take the time to write you back if it's not the right fit because there's just so many things that they're doing. You don't know how much they're how busy they are. But on the manufacturer's side, when you're reaching out to these stores, I think it's super important. And you guys hear me talk about this all the time at Paper Camp and in our forum is like adding value. You have to give them a reason to open it. You need to give them information that's helpful to them. When you're following up, don't just say, I'm checking in to make sure you received the email I sent a week ago. You need to be sending some additional value to them to get them to open it, whether it's
new releases.
And that's
why it's so fun, to see new releases. And I guess I was going to say, like, I think that there's at least 4 lines that I can think of right now that I want to have in the store, and I don't have time to place an order right now because we're ourselves preparing a big launch of, like, new products. The store just keeps getting busier, like, you know, just whatever myriad of reasons I have. Right. So when I hear back from someone 3 months later, like, oh, I'm making these new products. I'm like, thank you so much for sending me another email and not giving up on me. It just may take me a little minute.
Right. But I do like giving people the breathing space. Like I think
breathing space. Oh, so nice.
Yeah, just because you don't know what's going on in other people's lives, personally, mm-hmm. professionally, whatever it might be. So just, you know, trust that they got the email or that they received the package, yeah. give them some time to think on it, yep. and then, you know, reach back out when you have something more to say, whether yep. it's a new release Perfect. Or a promotion you're offering or a show you're going to that you want to invite them to, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, use those opportunities to follow up. But now that we've talked about your experience as a retailer, let's talk about how did you decide to open up this shop and, you know, and talk about what you offer there too, because I think it's a really unique mix of products.
Oh, man. It's been like a tiny quiet dream to have a retail store. I think the more I understand about business, the less it was like, ooh, I have to have a store. And I was like, ooh, yeah, that'll be a lot of work when we make that happen. And we were looking for a studio space for the print shop. We were getting priced out of our old space, and I was looking for something nearer our home in our neighborhood, and this amazing magical spot just opened up on York Boulevard with lots of great foot traffic, and you know, it was the right space for us. And so it's funny that I was like trying to get cheaper rent and then went for a retail space.
It was like such the
perfect situation for us and couldn't have landed better. And you know, my husband Joel, who is my business partner, is like super handy, and so we were able to do all the build out ourselves. And we've talked about this a lot, that this opportunity came to us and was perfect for us. And I don't know that everyone in our position would have been able to take advantage of it, because we were able to do all the build out ourselves, which yeah. I think we spent maybe my father-in-law is a contractor, and he estimated how much we would have spent. And I think we spent like maybe 5%.
Oh my goodness.
What like a contractor, like actual, like real people would have spent on building out this
real
space.
Real people.
I mean, it, like obviously that doesn't account for the time we spent right. doing it, but it's like materials and yeah. whatever. So time, you know, if you don't have cash, we do have time. So
yeah, totally. It's a balance.
This amazing situation opened up, and I had been thinking about just like low key in my brain, like what kind of store would I want? And it just crystallized when we saw the space. I'm like, oh, this is going to be an office supply store. I'm going to find products that like fill out the rest of what we make. We make notebooks, notepads, you know, things. I want to be focusing on making things for your desk and like thinking about like people in cubicles need cute things to like, mm-hmm. you know, write on or whatever. So that was kind of the inspiration for shorthand the line.
Yeah.
And so then when we had the opportunity for the store, I was like, I just want to like find cute pens and pencils and desk calendars and, you know, organizers and just all the things that people need, because I don't feel like there is like a cohesive like store like this, except for like Staples and
right.
need a boutique Staples. So I'm here.
It's awesome.
We were also like really inspired by CW Pencils in New York and Goods for the Study by McNally Jackson.
Yep.
And they, Goods for the Study carries our products. But I think like any good inspiration, I don't think you'd walk into our store and be like, gee golly, this looks like McNally Jackson. It's its own thing. We have a very specific brand, very specific aesthetic. We don't carry the same stuff necessarily,
right?
But that was definitely where I like got the inspiration of like, this could work.
That's awesome. So talk about the types of products you carry. I mean, you mentioned for the desk, but you have done a really good job of curating products that most people wouldn't find on their own. I feel like you have very unique stuff you look high and low for. So talk yeah. about like what kind of things those are and where do you find them?
Man, I spend a lot of time perusing the internet trying to find things. And, you know, even sometimes on Pinterest, I'll find like somebody posted a cute pair of scissors and I'll be like, what are those scissors?
Yeah.
And most people aren't telling you what brand they are. So I'll just keep hunting down this rabbit trail until I find out like the manufacturer or distributor for this item. And then, which like takes way too much time.
Yeah.
Like way too much time. It's unreasonable. And then by the time I figure out who makes it, I'm like, oh, they make like 30 other things that are amazing and perfect and that I've never seen before and are so exciting. And I'm not afraid to like buy things within a very specific like color palette and, you know, aesthetic. And so if just because it would suit all people doesn't mean it suits the store.
Yeah.
But when people walk in, it has such a strong visual feel. And it's been really reassuring that it's like not too girly, not, you know, it's not too austere. Somehow we're like fitting that nice balance of being for everyone mm-hmm. while being very limited and really trying hard to find things that other people aren't carrying.
Yeah. It's a beautiful mix. You've done a great job. You guys should be proud of yourselves for that.
Well, it's not an accident. You know, like I've worked really hard to like make it what it is, which is great. I mean, a lot of it comes really easily. Like the vision for it, the brand aesthetic, like that comes really easily. But then the work putting in to like keep it stocked and keep finding new things, but while keeping all the same stuff, because I want it to be, I mentioned Staples earlier, like a store where you know you're always going to be able to find brass pencil sharpeners. Or like, oh, I've run out of my Palomino pencils. I'm gonna go in because I know they're having them. Like,
right.
This isn't like a seasonal store that I have to re-merchandise every few months for each season with brand new products.
Yeah.
It really, I want it to be like, you know, you're going to be able to get the same notebook you got 6 months ago because it's always in stock.
That's awesome.
Like that's important to me because people get so particular about their pens or their notebooks and their tape dispenser or whatever. Like
very much so.
Dispensers every 6 months, but
they do. They do. They're very particular about it. And you know, you've seen it from both sides now.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears and talk about Iron Curtain Press.
Yep.
And you mentioned that you're getting ready for a big release because I know the National Stationery Show is coming up soon. Are you guys exhibiting this year?
Yes.
You are. Okay.
We love that show. It's been great for us. Like I guess my goals for the show are always to like get new accounts and be profitable.
Yep.
Which I think 5 years in is a good goal. As your first year, just, you know, meeting people and debuting your line is a good goal.
Yeah, for sure. But the context.
If we weren't like making money at the show, then it would be a harder commitment to make, but it's a good show for us.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great show too, just given that it's our industry show. And I think there's a lot of companies within our community are branching out and doing a lot of different shows. New York Now, Vegas, even Atlanta, you know, there's a lot of different things happening. But I think for the people that are interested in doing their first show, I think Nationals, and they're in the paper industry, I think the National Stationery Show makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons. But what I wanted to ask you is, so you're getting ready to launch a whole new set of products.
Yeah.
So can you, for those that haven't done a show or those that haven't done regular releases to wholesale, how early are you planning for these big releases? Like for you to release it in May, when did you start kind of conceptualizing things and then, you know, actually developing them?
Yeah. And I will give you my way of doing it, which is not, I think, like industry standard or, you know, I think, yeah. So anyways, I'll just tell you what I do.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about these ideas kind of percolating. Like we released our first line of office supplies, like the notebooks and notepads and brass pushpins 2 years ago at the stationery show. So like not quite 2 years ago. And then last year with the store being released, I just gave myself permission to not release any major new things. We did cards. The show was still fine. Yep. We didn't have anything major. And instead of being like doomsday, what have I done? I was like, shorthand is what I'm creating this year.
Yeah.
And that needs my attention. So I've had basically at this point, it's almost 2 full years to sit with the products I'm currently making and be like, what is logically the next step to add to this line?
Yeah.
A year ago, if I had just pushed it through like out of desperation to feel like the need to create something new, I would have just made like the same notebooks we currently make, but slightly smaller, and like the same notepads, but slightly smaller. And I started thinking like, how will a store merchandise this? Is there a need for this? Like if a store is buying the notebooks, why would they also buy the smaller notebook? Like, and also like the price point can't be that different because it costs almost as much to manufacture the small notebook as the large notebook. So then what incentive is there for the customer, the retailer, anyone to buy this? And I was like, I can't answer these questions, so I'm not going to make it.
Yeah.
But it's hard to like, you know, have the discipline to be like, you know what, I'm going to be patient. And so for me this year, I am so pumped about the new stuff we're releasing because I've thought about it. It makes sense. It fits in with what we already have, but are totally new products.
Yeah.
And are things that when we've just tested out and made little samples for our own selves, I've been like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Or made something for our friend who's like, been like, I'm looking for this kind of notebook. And I'm like, well, let me make you something like that. And I'm like, this is a great thing that I'm about to make.
Yeah.
And then also having the year in the store to be like, oh, these are notebooks that are hard to find. These are the kinds of things that people want to buy. And it kind of takes the fear out of it because even if retailers don't jump on these things right away, I know we're going to sell a boatload of them in our store.
Yeah.
So that's different than like other product releases if you don't also have a store.
True.
But it's because I'm creating things for my world.
True. I love what you said about how you gave yourself permission last year to not do a huge gigantic release around the show and like that shorthand was your focus in growing. And I want to reiterate that to our listeners because I feel like we put so much pressure on ourselves as business owners to like get everything done or we have to stick to a specific schedule.
New.
And really, no, that's not the case. Like, you have the running our own businesses, we have more flexibility than anywhere else you could work, you know, if you work for somebody else. And so this gives you the opportunity to say no to certain things, or to change the schedule if you need to, or change your mind entirely about something.
Yeah.
And so I love that you shared that, because I think it's important for people to remember that they are in control, that they set the rules for their business. And if something's not quite working the way they want it to, they can pivot and change gears and make those decisions. They're not always easy decisions to make, but I think
it feels scary at the time. Like, oh my God, I'm going to miss out on new accounts, or like people are going to be disappointed. And it's like, they don't even really notice. I mean, I love what I'm doing. I'm that passionate about what I do, but I also don't think there was anybody like crushed that Iron Curtain Press wasn't releasing anything new this year.
Right.
Like, or even, you know, if they even noticed. I mean, we did do 30 new cards, which it's a lot of new cards.
You still had a substantial release, but you didn't, you worked within what you already knew. You worked within your greeting cards, and you didn't, like you were talking about the notebooks and the smaller size, you know, that was a smart decision not to go down the path of what was just easy and doing a different version of what you already had.
Yeah.
So no, but I think that there's a lot of pressure, or people put a lot of pressure on themselves to add new product categories when they don't really have their systems down, or their.
And here's what I'll say. And, here's the bare bones, honest truth as a person with a store like mine, that when you add product categories in a hurry and haven't thought through what it is, it's pretty apparent.
Yeah.
To me on my end.
Interesting.
And there are greeting card lines that I really, really love, and they released new product categories. And so I picked some of them up because they fit for the store, and the quality was not what I'm looking for when I think about whatever this product is.
Right.
And they, and I can tell, like, it, and here's what I'll say, like, it is so, so expensive to release a solid line of products.
Yep.
I feel like this is a question that comes up in the forum a lot, where it's like, how do I find X product, but with like a smaller minimum buy-in?
Right.
It's like, there is not that. And the reason why people invest in a product line is because it's an investment.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like if it was easy, everyone would do it. If there was a source for it to be more affordable, everyone would do it.
Right.
And I know everyone's businesses are different, and so numbers are different, but I'm staring down the face of we get the interior pages for our notebooks offset printed, and then we letterpress the covers and we bind them in house. So just the, like, I've designed the interior pages, but some, like, another shop in LA makes them.
Yeah.
And I'm about to spend $22,000 on the paper that goes inside of notebooks.
Yeah.
That is no joke. Like, and maybe another company could be listening to this and be like, oh yeah, I do that all the time. And I'm like, well, for me, I do not do that.
Yeah. $22,000's a lot for just the paper inside.
Because that's still the cover. Like, we still have to like make the covers, the labor for the covers, like the labor for making them, the packaging, like all of that. So That's like the bulk of the expense for sure. But the, like, that I'm really like having to like budget in my cash flow. But at the same time, like, I've crunched the numbers, I've done my research, and I know that these are going to sell at the price point I can sell them at. And so all the math works out. And I also have done it where it's like, what if worst case scenario, it took 3 years to sell all these? It's fine, because the money is there to make, like, it, like, it's not like, it's not like I'm overextending myself to do this big thing.
No, I totally agree with you. And I think the big takeaway from what you just said are a few things. It's one, if you're going to invest in something and go into a new product category, excuse me, you need to do your homework. You need to know it's something you want to do for the long haul. You want to make sure it's the quality, that you, the rest of your product line is up to snuff. And then two, you don't want to just dabble in it. I know it is a big investment, and there are ways to kind of shortcut some of these things when you're just trying to test the market. But if you are going to go into a category, I think it's better to go deep, and I think it's better to really, I don't know. I mean, you stay within your financial reason.
And think about why you're doing it, because when you really like know the why you're making something, it makes it then so much easier to sell that product, which is then therefore so much easier to recoup your investment. So if you're making mugs just because everyone's making mugs and you're like, I got to hop on this mug train, people are making money off mugs. It's like, but what makes yours special, and what makes yours, what, like, why should someone buy yours over anybody else's? And like, I think about that with my notebooks. Like, why should anyone buy my notebook more than anybody else's notebook?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the color of the white paper is like really creamy and white. So when you're writing in it, it's like not blinding. The lines are like this really nice blue. So if you were to like want to like photocopy it or like scan it in, it'd be easy to take the blue out of the image. So if you could draw on it, and the lines would then not show up later pretty easily.
Yeah.
The corners are rounded, so when you stuff it into your bag, they don't get all damaged. It lays flat and opens wide because of the YRO binding. And we've got a thick chipboard back so that when you open it all the way wide, if like, let's say you're not at a desk and you want to write on it, it's still sturdy enough to write on.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, don't you want to buy this awesome notebook? And those are the things that I think about when I'm like, oh my God, what does a perfect notebook need? And I'm a very enthusiastic person naturally. So it doesn't take me a long time to get riled up about paper goods.
Yeah.
But I think like, if you can be like, these are the qualities, the mug that I'm releasing, and oh my gosh, and here's what's so amazing about it. It's like so funny, or like has this cool shape, or I mean, I don't know.
I'm going to stop you because it's so clear you're passionate about this, and it's clear that you had something very specific you wanted. You were looking at the utility of the product.
Absolutely.
I think that's a very different thing than somebody that's just starting out and thinking about what products do I want to offer, and how, like, they're looking at it from a cash flow perspective. They're looking at it.
Everybody else making? Like, what's the next, like, looking to other brands to set the standard of what is it that I release next, as opposed to like, what makes sense for me personally as the maker of this item.
Right. Right. And I think that it's easy. I see a lot of people kind of falling into that trap of what is everyone else making and how are they making it? Because I want to kind of replicate their success or replicate these things because it's easy. But I think people need to like think about things more from the perspective that you're talking about. Like, what fires them up? What's their why? What do they really want this product to portray? And I don't know, we're getting deep here, but
as we're even talking, I'm like thinking of all the caveats of like companies where this doesn't apply to, like,
yeah,
you know, like big box stores or, right, you know, mass market stuff. They don't have to put as much thought into it, but they're also if their product tanks, they've got like millions of other SKUs. Yeah. And so it's not going to like ruin their business.
Right.
Whereas with my very small business, I like every decision that I make really matters. And the passion behind what I do is what makes my business stand out from a mass market store.
Absolutely.
And then, so it matters that I care a lot.
Yeah.
Because that's part of what I'm selling. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think that also comes with years of experience too. I mean, you've been doing this for how many? 7 years?
Oh man, 9 years.
You hit 9 years? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. February. Yeah. Middle of February is 9 years. And then end of March is, one whole year for the store.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
I know. I'm very proud.
That's wonderful. But I do think
I'm interrupting really quickly, but I think I've taken the view from the very beginning of that this is a marathon, not a sprint.
Yep.
And like, it's so, so hard not to like hold yourself in comparison to other lines. You want to know who else started the same time I started? Rifle Paper. And if I look at my trajectory versus the, like, you know, Anna and Nathan Bond's trajectory, it is not the same, but I cannot get down on myself because I don't have the background they have. I don't, you know, like, I don't, like, what for whatever, what, all the things that lead us where we're all at, I am my own unique star flower and they are their own unique star flower.
Yeah.
And I'm so, so happy and proud of where Iron Curtain Press is. And I'm so thrilled with where Rifle Paper is. You can't compare them because it's two different, completely different things.
Right. Even down to the day-to-day decision making, like,
yeah,
no two people, no two companies are going to make the same decisions, and their paths are going to be different. I was talking with a client the other day, and I was talking about how slow growth in your business can actually be such a blessing because then it gives you time to really like think about what you want to do and make thoughtful decisions and pay attention to your cash flow. And, you know, she was talking about wanting to hire a staff because she can't do it all. And I was like, yes, hiring has scaled my business. Every time I've hired somebody, my business has grown and it's been a great experience for me. But at the same time, you can't just jump into that stuff without, you know, slow growth is good growth. I guess I just want to reiterate
that. Well, and it's helped me minimize mistakes because I'm making things on a longer scale, like longer time scale, and then like just slower. And so it helps you like think about a cruise ship turning in the water versus a speedboat. If I'm moving at the speed of a cruise ship, I'm not going to get too far off course before I realize like, oh, this isn't the right for me. And I slowly correct back onto course. Whereas a speedboat, you just crank the wheel too hard and oh my gosh, you're 180 degrees from where you were supposed to be. I don't know. That's a weird analogy.
No, it's good.
Not in the moment, but you know,
I like it.
You're
right. I mean, I'm a fan of being decisive for sure, but I'm also, because you don't want to like overthink things to death. You know, if you sit on something for too long, then it won't go anywhere. But at the same time, I do think there's a lot of value in kind of taking things slow and not trying to release like 10 new product categories and diving deep within each category and doing, you know, 20 SKUs in each one or whatever it is. I'm just making these numbers up. But
yeah. And if you have a business that you can do that in, cause you've got the financial backing and the, you know, and the thought and everything, wonderful. That's awesome. So I'm not saying this is like, I mean, I guess we keep saying these caveats all the way through, like, this is work. for me. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, and every PaperCamp webinar we do or interview I do, everybody's business is different. So I guess we shouldn't caveat it because you're just telling your experiences.
One thing I will say that's like a wonderful thing about this whole community, because it's time to plug it, right? Just kidding. She's not paying me to say this. But I remember I was still only making greeting cards, wasn't making any other products yet. And I was talking to Lisa and Jen from Farewell Papery, and they were mentioning that they have this spreadsheet that they plug all their numbers into before they start making products. And that's how they figure out. And I was like, if the product is profitable before they even make it. And I was like, oh, what a novel concept. And so I've been doing that from the very beginning before I released anything that wasn't a greeting card.
Yep.
And I mentioned that to Lisa when I saw her like last camp. Month.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, it's amazing that you just have always done that. And I was like, what do you mean? I got it from you. And she's like, oh no, we made a couple huge bombs where we like misestimated the like, pricing and the like the wholesale price, retail price, and like bombed a couple products, or I'm probably overspeaking, whatever. They made a couple mistakes that led them to having a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I learned from your mistake without having to make it myself. And hopefully other people have learned from my mistakes. Yeah. And, you know,
and mine as well. Sharing. They've all heard my fireproofing story. Just kidding. Awesome. Well, let's, you know, you have been doing this for 9 years now. So let's take it back to the very beginning. If you had somebody sitting across from you right now and they were brand new to this industry and they wanted to get started, what would be your biggest piece of advice to them?
Find your voice and really spend time developing your line and your style. And like, even if that means you make things for a couple of years and like, they change kind of dramatically, that's not necessarily bad. You can't start with a fully formed voice. So take the time to like know what your line is, what its strengths are, like who your customer is based on who you're, you know, what you're trying to make. My line, when I think about my line, instead of making cards for like, you know, all my cards are for moms, like moms buy my cards, or all my cards are for, you know, teenage girls buy my cards. I view it as one person has a myriad of people in their life that need to get cards. And so though they're thinking of a card like for their mom or for their mother-in-law or for their sister or for their best friend, those four people need different cards, but it's coming from the same person.
Yep.
And so I feel like our line, we can get away with having a variety of cards that all fit together. Like the color scheme is very cohesive, because it's all like, in my mind, it's all coming from the same voice of like, or that's my motivation. And I heard someone describe the way they were making their card line, and I was like, oh, isn't that just the way people make cards? But then I heard someone else talking about their card line, and I realized they did it in a different way of like, they're designing cards that you give to X person. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. So, you know, just figuring out like, who are you making cards for? Why are you making cards for them? You know, sound like a broken record here now, but
no.
I think finding your voice is really important, because I think that's the quickest killer to your line is being too similar to anybody else. And there are so many greeting card lines now, and lots of people are doing really excellent work, but sometimes there can feel like there's too much of a crossover because of like whatever cultural zeitgeist is out there making it so that unicorns are, you know, everywhere and everyone needs to make a unicorn card. That's great, but you know,
yeah.
Think about it before you really do it.
Yeah. Having your own unique point of view, your own aesthetic, your own stance on what you're doing and why you're doing it, I think is hugely important. So that's fantastic advice. Well, awesome, Rosanna. Thank you so much for joining us today. Before we head off, tell everybody where they can find you online.
Shopshorthand.com is our store, and we are launching our online version of our store. So you can find all the special treasures that we sell. It should be live at the end of March. So whenever you're listening to this, it will probably be live. And then ironcurtainpress.com.
Excellent. Awesome. And you're at Iron Curtain Press on Instagram and social too, right?
Yep. At Iron Curtain Press and at Shop Shorthand.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us. It was awesome.
Thanks so much, Katie. A pleasure.
Hey friends, if you're thinking about wholesale and or trade shows in the near future, I highly recommend you check out our PaperCamp program. The next one's going to be in September, and it's 2 amazing but intense days where we talk about how to ensure your product line is ready for wholesale, how to reach retail buyers, which sales tools you need to have, and really how to create them, plus all the nitty gritty details that you need to know before you do a large wholesale show. We have a fantastic group of speakers joining us. They'll sit side by side with you during the program, and we even have time reserved for one-on-one sessions. Sarah from Constellation & Co. said that PaperCamp was pivotal for her business and the best money she's ever spent investing in herself and her business. When Lisa from Tiramisu Papery came to camp, she was already working with a handful of wholesale accounts. And after camp, she went home and put in the hard work and is now selling to over 120 stores and working with 2 sales reps. If you want to make transitions in your business or refine your current wholesale program, head over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp to register. And just so you know, seats are limited. We like to keep things small so that you get personal attention. And we also want to make sure that all of your questions are answered. So more information is available at tradeshowcamp.com. Then click on Paper Camp, and we hope you'll join us. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.